UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, good.
And was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls
on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome everyone, wherever you be joining us from tonight. This episode we are blessed with Helen's account of an encounter with an unknown object while on a family trip visiting relatives up in Scotland. And this week's voice submission has been sent in by Tim from California and his weird paranormal experience from when he was a kid. But first off, thank you to all those that have left a 5-star ratings and review on Apple Podcasts this week. Listener 55, Chris DeBuru, and Brun 240. I appreciate and it really helps the show out no end.
If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hi, my name is Tim Burns. This is my story. When I was a little kid, I lived the middle class life, the pool, the school, the little league, the whole nine yards. I had a normal room. I had a room filled with posters. One was Farrah Fawcett. One was Earl Campbell. One was the Hardy Boys. Here's where it gets weird. My father came home with a bunch of books that he bought at a garage sale. Now, that's kind of normal. I didn't know about this at the time. I started seeing a face on my Earl Campbell poster. It was just the face of a kid. And, you know, being a little kid, I didn't care. It was okay. It was a cool kid. And everything was great. And then one night, the face got really scary. And I screamed and I called out for my parents. They came in. I said, hey, there's this face on my Earl Campbell poster. Well, it turns out in that box of books that my stepfather had brought home was some books about witchcraft and some spells and that kind of thing. And that stack of books in that box were sitting on the other side of the wall where my Earl Campbell poster was. So I was terrified. I saw this face. It was a hideous face. It happened a couple of times. I didn't learn until years later that my father had put two and two together and discovered that, hey, these books are kind of associated with what's going on with him. He took those to the dump, and I had never, ever, from that point on, had a problem. I never saw faces or whatever. I'm a college graduate. I'm the normal guy. I played sports in college, that kind of thing. I enjoy my life. But to this day, I'm 54 years old. Seeing that face was entirely terrifying. And I know exactly what it was. It was some form of demon or a witch or something. And it was terrifying. I just thought I'd share with y'all. It's, no reason to BS you people. I just wanted to tell you my story. God bless.
Welcome to the show, Helen.
Thank you.
Calling from the Dorset coast in the UK.
Absolutely.
Lovely. It's great to have you coming on today, Helen. Now, you're going to be sharing a few unusual experiences that you have had going back to the 1980s. Would you like to start at the very beginning for us, please, Helen?
Well, I think I probably had a couple of experiences when I was a young child. But in those days, nobody had any... nobody spoke about these things. Children had never heard of UFOs, so it didn't ring any bells in my childhood. When I was 13, I can remember my father flew down from Shetland to Aberdeen, and on the way, the tiny airplane, and the pilot called them into the cockpit to point out a cigar-shaped UFO just behind them to the right. And so first thing he said when he'd come home, because he was full of it, was, "I've just seen a UFO." That was probably the first time I'd heard about such things, but he never told lies. So if he saw one, then they existed, and I didn't give it any more thought. But I was open to the whole idea that they existed. And during the 70s, I can remember having a terrible time. I couldn't wear a watch. I actually walked under a street lamp and the light exploded, the bulb exploded. In my home, I was buying a new kettle every week. The washing machine broke, the hot water boiler broke. I seemed to be upsetting everything. I had no idea what I was doing, but it was all very expensive. But anyway, I was divorced. I had three young children. And every year, we would pile into my parents' car. We all lived in Banbury, and we'd... in Oxfordshire, and we'd go up to visit the relatives in the north of Scotland, 40-odd miles north of Aberdeen. And we did this journey all the time. It was pretty run-of-the-mill, really. We would go up the west coast one time and the east coast the next time and vary it. But we went up one October, and for some reason, we thought we'd do it different, and we'd go up the middle on the B Road past Abbotsford, where Sir Walter Scott's big house that he had built on the borders itself. So we're traveling. My parents are in the front. They would have been 54 and 60 years old, both quite bright. And then I was in the back with the three children who were 5, 7, and 9, or maybe 6, 8, and 10, that sort of age. And around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we were on the borders, and it was daylight. Obviously, no cars except ourselves. And I was actually reading a story to the kids, and my daughter gasped and said, "Look, look." So we all looked slightly behind us to our right, and there was a copse of trees, maybe 15 feet high. They weren't massive trees. And this black triangle, it was triangular but with rounded corners. There were no sharp joints. Just rose out of the trees, flat, as not nose first. It just came up. It sat at tree top height. The trees didn't move. There was no noise. There was no flames or anything at all. It was silent. And as we looked, my father slowed the car down to walking pace. And it ducked behind us. It didn't come closer. It seemed to be the same distance. The car sped up. It stayed with us. We slowed down. It stayed with us. And it had no joins. No nuts, no bolts, not even a windscreen. It looked as though it had been cut in a mold. It was eerie, but I wasn't especially afraid. My father said, "Quick, get the camera and take a photo." The camera was behind me in the back window ledge. And as I reached for it, I suddenly had this fear, real fear. And then I just knew I mustn't do that. And as I got that feeling, my mother shouted from the front seat, "No, no, you mustn't, you mustn't." Pretty silly, but that was, we obviously both had the same thing. And we watched it, fascinated, obviously. We had the trees on one side, and on the other side were fields. And we watched it. I have no idea. It seemed like forever. It seemed like 20 minutes to me, but it probably was about 5 minutes. And then the children began to get nervous because it was spooky. And the thought went through my head, "I've got to stop this. I've got to, let's start reading the book again." As I thought that, it took off behind us at a rate of knots, a phenomenal speed. So, okay, the kids were getting a bit nervous. So face in the front, and I started to read the story that I've been reading before. And my father, within half a minute less, said, "Oh my God, look." And we looked up, and there it was facing us, maybe half a mile down the road on the other side, on the field. So we had a clear view of it. And that was all. I started to read the book for the kids. And the next minute, that was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, on the border, we just passed Abbotsford. And Google tells me now that it's an hour and 10 minutes or something. To get from there to the outskirts of Edinburgh, there's a ring road. And the next thing, we were on this ring road, it was pitch black, and it was 10 o'clock at night. And my father kept saying, "How has it taken so long? What's gone wrong?" You know? And he and I had only shouted much of our entire lives. We were both obviously very stressed, but we had no idea. And the awful thing is, we didn't question it. We just kind of assumed that everything was normal, and here we were now, without thinking that how did we get here? You know, we traveled 100 miles. It's taken us 7 hours, and we have no memory of that. We went from there and drove to Anstruther, which was our destination. And we arrived at Anstruther at midnight. And cars didn't travel that fast in those days, but we lost 6 or 7 hours and several hundred miles with no memory at all. But the awful thing is that I forgot about it. My parents stayed the night in Anstruther with us at a relative's house, and they carried on, just the two of them, to go to Aberdeen, and left the kids and I with this aunt in her boarding house to have a holiday. Next day, my face was scarlet. I was badly sunburned. This is October in the east coast of Scotland. Nobody gets sunburned in July there, never mind October. But my face was scarlet and burning for the rest of the week. And we had a very nice holiday. Nothing was spoken. I forgot all about it. And the children and I had a good holiday, enjoyed ourselves. My parents came and picked us up on the way home, and we travelled all the way back to Banbury without any comment of any description. When we got back to Banbury, my brother, who was 17 at the time, had just been accepted for the Air Force, and he'd had the confirmation through that morning. So he was telling my mother and I, and we're pleased for him. And then my mother said, "Well, actually, when you join the Air Force, you're going to have to find out what this strange aeroplane was that we saw." And she described it and explained that it was 15 feet off the ground, doing 3 miles an hour. And he looked at us, laughed. He said, "That wasn't an aeroplane." And that's the first time that the penny dropped. It was so strange. I hadn't questioned it. I hadn't thought about it. I had no memory of it until that moment. So within an hour, I went home and I took each of the children into a room by themselves and said quietly, can you remember that strange aeroplane? Yes. And tell me about it. And I got three identical stories, and all their stories tallied totally with my own. So we all had the same memory, and we hadn't discussed it amongst ourselves before that. So it was the memory was clean. It hadn't been altered in any way. And that was all. The youngest one became very nervous and so on. But really, we basically just got back to normal. And we lived in a quiet street close to the town centre in Banbury. And the following October, a year later, and it was about 7 o'clock at night, it was dark. And I was walking home. The four of us were walking home. And about three houses from our own, there was a break between two houses. We're on the opposite side of the road. And it was there, the same one, or one that looked the same, except this was dark now. And it had three lights that went one, two, three on the three sides of the triangle that I could see. It was white and red, and I can't honestly remember what the third color was, but it mesmerized me. And we stood looking at it, and I felt that I couldn't break away. I had stand there gazing at these lights. Cars were passing between me and these lights, but obviously they couldn't see them. It was behind some houses on the other side of the road. And my daughter began to panic, and she said, they found us. They know where we are. They. And then she turned on me and she said, you're the grown-up. You're supposed to protect us from this. And that broke the spell, if you like, and I shepherded them all home very quickly. And as we got into my house, I dashed to the window at the back and looked out, and it was just at the bottom of my garden, very slowly and quietly and silently going off. And I watched it for 5 or 6 minutes while it just drifted away out of sight. That really did worry us all. A couple of days later, and late afternoon, again, we're walking to the shop in an adjacent street. We were close to home. And it just appeared above the rooftops of the houses we were walking alongside. And it wobbled side to side. And I just felt, okay, that's goodbye. And then it took off at a rate of knots. And I really had the feeling, I was quite convinced, that it come and said goodbye, which the following week or when the local paper came out, it did carry an article saying there had been a flap in Banbury and lots of people had seen a UFO. So that one was not just us. Other people saw it as well. But I had the distinct feeling that it was the same or part of the same thing. That really was all. Over the years, we had strange events happening. Radio records would start to play when the record player wasn't plugged into the wall and things like that. So it did have its surreal moments. But that really was we saw them again at a distance. I know that my children carried on having lights outside the window and things like that. But for me, that was an end to it. The only couple of strange things happened afterwards. I was visiting a friend for coffee one day, and her husband was there. He was a GP. And he said, I can see congratulations are in order. Now, I'm a divorced woman with two kids. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you're pregnant, aren't you? I can see. And I mean, he's looking at my face and my expression, obviously. And I said, no, George, I'm definitely not pregnant. And he said, you are. You are. I'm never wrong. I can tell. And I said, well, no, honestly, it'd be a virgin birth. And then I stopped and thought, oh my God, it's been like 3-4 months. But being always a regular and always, as I say, being divorced, I didn't have to worry about keeping track on these things. And about 4 or 5 weeks later, everything went back to normal. I didn't put any thought to that until years went by and I saw more and more reports of other women having similar experiences. I have no idea. It could have just been a normal thing for whatever reason. But I was fine physically. There was no, wasn't as though I was run down or ill or anything. Yeah, that's about it. We carried on occasionally spotting things because when you don't drive, you do spend a lot of time, or I do now, looking up at the sky. So you do actually see more. The only other thing is that 5-6 years after that, I had my first cancer. And over the next 20-odd years, I had 4 different cancers, and very serious ones. But I survived them, and I've been cancer-free for the past 10, 15 years. But that's unusual because they were all different cancers. And I don't know the medical facts and figures on that, but it doesn't happen to many people. So I wonder if I was exposed to radiation at some point.
Very, very possibly. I mean, there is a correlation between people having experiences like you have and cancer.
Yeah, I've read about it since, and I assume that that's a weakness that I developed from that sunburn. Mm-hmm.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Looking back on it now, Helen, do you feel that there was a lot more to it than that you actually remember? I mean, six or 7 hours is a long...
Oh, yeah.
Quite a few hours to lose.
5 people for 6 hours is a ludicrous time to lose. I've never had blackout. Well, I mean, obviously it happened to us all. We none of us could remember. I did at one point, when I was very ill, I can remember lying in hospital and they'd sent for the family and I only had a week to live, you know. And a thought came to me that I'd never spoken out about this. I'd told it the occasional person, but usually to be greeted with ridicule. And I'd never gone into it in detail the way I just have to you. And I thought, I've got to tell the world, because this is, if it happened to us, it must happen to other people, and they're going to feel as isolated and confused as we did. And I felt I should speak out. So as I began to recover, I had a hypnosis session, but it was very expensive, and I was sick. I couldn't afford to keep going. It didn't break through to those hours. It took us up to that point, but it didn't break through as to what happened in those hours. But someday I'll do that.
And you'll be quite comfortable with doing that, would you, Helen?
I think now that I'm older, I would be. I think I might not have been able to cope with it when I was young. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have been able to cope with it because I'm... quite sure that whatever it was wasn't a walk in the park. But by now I'm older and wiser and tougher. I think I can deal with it.
You have been through a lot, and I'm really happy that you've made a good recovery. So it's
it affects your life, but it didn't spoil my life.
It give you a very different outlook.
Oh gosh, yeah. Yeah, very different. I from that day on, I realized that nothing was what I had thought it was. My views on religion and politics changed completely, because I knew that if this was happening to me, that it was happening to other people. And as the years moved on and we were able to get books, and now we've got the internet, and we discover, well, yes, we go back to Ezekiel and the Bible. People have been having these experiences throughout history. There is no way our governments don't know that. That's just not possible. And so whether it's for our own sake that we're not being told, or some other reason, I don't know, but I feel people should know.
It also makes you wonder about myths and legends, you know, old folklore stories, yeah, and stuff, you know, with goblins, mm-hmm, and stuff. It really, yep, makes you wonder.
The next year after our experience, I joined the Open University because I'd left school when I was young. And straight away I went for history because that's always been my love. But ancient history and fascinates me. That's what I've spent my life studying, just for myself. And I've come to the realization that myths and legends are similar across the world, that God stories and so on are similar, but your goblins and your fairies and your little people underground and all this, that runs right across the world. Why on earth would people keep these stories alive unless they were important?
I agree. I think that's the way it is. I think that's pretty much what they were seeing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think they were talking about their experiences in the way I just have. And it got carried down through the generations because it mattered, is my theory on it. And there are so many mysteries in the world. The ancient buildings, the Stonehenge. Since I grew up in the 50s, nobody paid any attention. But since then, they've discovered loads of Neolithic brochs and stone circles and so on in Scotland. It's the place is alive with them. My area, Aberdeenshire, in the past 20 years, they've discovered walls where the stones have melted into each other. We can't do that. We have no idea how to do that. So the one thing leads you into other things, and you begin to question everything that you thought you knew about the world and history.
There's a lot more to what they taught us.
Yeah, I think so. It may be because they think we would panic, but I don't think people would panic. I think people would just look at the world differently and accept that there are things happening that we're maybe not in total control of, but I don't think there'd be mass panic, no.
I think you give the human race far too much credit. I think there'd be a few people throwing, well, you know, like they used to do when, yeah, they used to throw stones at the sun and the moon.
You might be right.
To be honest. If the last year is anything to go by.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true. There have been some very strange reactions. So, and a lot of mob mentality. You are right. I maybe do have too much faith.
But there would be a lot of people which would accept, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
And we would be one of them, or we would be two of them at least.
Yes, and I think if you were to tell children, because they're brought up on Star Wars and spaceships and so on, they would accept it as something, as part of the universe. They wouldn't panic. It's only the older people that would panic, I think.
And I think they'd be probably quite blasé about it.
Yeah, I think so. I know my youngest one was quite nervous. He was 5 years old, and he was very nervous for quite a while after this event happened. But to whatever happened, it left him nervous. And he was, up till then, he'd thought that mummy could solve everything and would keep him safe no matter what. So it did, in all three of them, give them a shake their foundations there, yes. So I may be being overly optimistic, but
Yeah, because it was an unusual reaction when they said, you know, you're the adult, you're the parent, you're supposed to protect us. That's a very unusual thing for them to say.
It shook me out of my hypnosis or whatever it did, and obviously there would have been nothing I could do. I had no way of protecting them from whatever happened. I was as helpless as they were, which is not a nice thought.
No, it makes us very vulnerable, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When your father would make this journey, how was it, say, two or three times a year you'd head that way?
Yeah, depending, weddings, funerals, holidays, you know.
And was it the same route he would always take?
No. We would always go on the main roads through Carlisle and Glasgow and then cut across, or through Newcastle and Edinburgh and cut across. I mean, we moved to south in 1964. There were no motorways. We had to go through the centre of Birmingham and in those days. So we changed slightly as the roads improved. But this was a holiday and we were in no hurry. So we thought we'd take the scenic route and go through the middle. It's a very pretty road. They're going through the Northumbrian Forest and then Abbotsford and up through the small border towns. It is a lovely road. I've never been back, I must be honest. I've never gone that way again. But it was just, it was a one-off. It was the first time we'd done it. And just to do something different.
Just by chance, this object was there?
Yeah, just by chance. I have doubts, but that's only my own supposition. It just seems too strange that it was just by chance and it just happened to be on such an empty road. And who knows? I've got no way of knowing.
I know it's very difficult. Are you able to engage a size of this object?
I'm not good at distances or sizes. It was small. It would have been, I think, about, it was triangular, but it was very rounded. It was like a flatfish where it was fat in the middle and tapering down at the edges.
Okay.
I would have said probably about 6 feet deep, absolute maximum, probably less, and probably about 10 feet from edge to edge. But it was, we were looking underneath, well, from underneath and at front, so we could see the top of it and the bottom of it simultaneously. It wasn't big. It certainly did not take six of us in there, and it didn't take our car, that's for absolutely sure. But it would have been one man, two man maximum, yeah.
Very small size.
I've read since that that's quite common and there's something bigger lurking around. I've got no idea. I've got theories, but I have no idea. And I've got no idea. I mean, we could have all passed out and driven into a ditch and sat there for 7 hours, for all I know. But no, we just have, nobody had any memory of what happened in the 7 hours. Or travelling. The road between Abbotsford and Edinburgh, we've no memory of being on that at all. So, very strange.
I mean, in those days, you know, we didn't have sat-navs and stuff. So everyone was on map. But your father, you know, he did journey up in Scotland. You know, he knew the routes. He knew distance. You know, he knew a thing or two.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh, yeah. He was a prisoner of war for 5 years. He'd been to hell and back, really. He was on the death march. He was a strong, intelligent, brave man. He was nobody's fool. He wasn't aggressive, but he was nobody's fool. He knew the roads like a back of his hand. He'd spent the whole of the 50s while we were still living in Scotland. He worked in England. He would drive down and come home every 3 months. So all the roads, he knew like the back of his hand. And the borders, actually, if you look at the map, is sort of 30 miles across. It's not a big stretch of country. And he'd been on that road before. We just hadn't gone as a family on that road. But he had driven everywhere. We used to joke that he must have a gypsy in his soul. But I think it was because he was a prisoner of war for 5 years. He just loved the freedom of getting in the car and driving. Every Sunday, we'd we'd drive through the, we'd drive up to Balmoral for and have a picnic and so on. So he was a seasoned traveller. Yeah, very much so.
You know, you'd had all these other little strange occurrences, you know, with the electrical faults and all that.
Mm.
And your father had seen this UFO, the scar shape before.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a lot of correlation between generations that have experiences.
It seems to be. I remember my daughter, when she was young, telling me that she floated down the stairs at night when everybody else was in bed wearing a nightdress. And she said that frequently. Maybe it was just a recurring dream. I don't know. I never saw her anywhere except safely tucked up in bed. It was disconcerting. It really was, because we weren't, we didn't like it, shall we say. We weren't happy with it. There, a lot of very small but very strange things did happen to the family.
Oh, yeah, and also before we actually started recording, you mentioned something that happened to you when you were about, was it 8 years old?
Yeah, that was my friend and I were, we played on the golf course all the time. I mean, this is Scotland. We've got this fantastic, beautiful golf course. Loads of rhododendron bushes, 20 feet high. And it was a paradise for children. And woods throughout the golf course. And she and I were on a little hill. I mean, it wasn't, it was part of the golf course, so it was obviously just a rise in the ground. And there was a cloud that you could almost have reached up and touched. It was so low, just above our heads and covering this area. And through the clouds, you know, you can see the sun, the rays of the sun coming through a cloud, and they come down in, like spotlights onto the ground sometimes. Well, these were coming through, and they were dusky pink and lilac and pale blue, all very gentle colours. And it was one, then the next, then the next, all around us, around us, it surrounded us. And I was absolutely mesmerised and stood for ages. I can remember my friend got bored or frightened, and she went off. And I thought, I'll be along in a minute. And when I did arrive at the little bit in the woods that we were playing in, and she wouldn't speak to me because I'd said I'd be along in a minute, and I hadn't. I'd been ages. I thought it was only a minute. And it was years and years and years later before I even remembered that event or gave it any thought. My very earliest memory, I was two. And that would have been 1951. And my parents had two rooms in an attic above a shop, because nobody had houses. They'd just got married in 1947. And there was a skylight, and my father had me in his arms, and he opened the skylight, and we stuck our heads out because there was an owl in the tree at the back of the flat. And we stood there listening to this owl. That's the very earliest memory I've got. And I donkey's years before I read that owls can be often harbingers of strange events. But it's strange that should have stuck in my memory so clearly. But obviously an owl's a strange thing, so most parents would pick their kids up to go and listen to it. So I can't put anything on that. It just strange that it burned itself into my memory so well.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah. You look back, and probably most of it was just fairly run-of-the-mill, but you're never quite sure.
You know, we were talking before the show that when you actually had this experience, there wasn't much information out there, was there? You know, there was not really...
None, nothing, no. It was... there were no books, and even when books started to be written in the 80s, finding them was terribly difficult. I know the charity shops have got racks of them these days, but you couldn't find them. They were so rare. I managed to find them all and read them all, but Project Blue Book and the MUFON, they were almost all written by Americans in those days. but I had a thirst for finding out that other people had similar experiences. That really made me feel better.
Really appreciate you coming on today, Helen. It's been wonderful hearing that.
That's brilliant. Well, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you. No, I just feel that I don't feel that we were heroes in any sense. We certainly weren't, but I feel it's important that people should be aware.
I agree. And it's important to share, isn't it? It's important to come out, and even though it probably could be difficult in some situations, but...
I'm too old to care now.
Too old to care.
Freedom when you get this old.
That's great. Okay. Yeah, it's been great talking to you, Helen.
And you.
I feel like I've known you for years. Keep in contact.
Lovely to talk to you, Nick.
Okay, you take care of yourself. Okay. All right, Helen.
Bye now.
Okay, you enjoy the rest of your night. Bye-bye. That is all I have for you tonight, I'm afraid. Keep connected and updated with the show on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And if you or a family member have had an encounter that you'd like to share, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or head on over to my website ufochroniclespodcast.com and reach out to me via the contact page. Big thank you to Helen and Tim for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.